for Monday, February 18th. Are there any discussion corrections on the minutes? And I would note that Janice did email them out, so members should have gotten them yesterday. Request. So, seeing no discussion, all in favor of the minutes dated February 18th, 2013, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The minutes are approved. First bill on the calendar today is Senator Rest, Senate File 540. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the A3 amendment.
That's been distributed. And this is, Senator Rest, this is the first
That's correct. This is an author's amendment.
It's an author's amendment. So Senator Rest moves the A3 amendment to get the bill in the shape she would like. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The A3 is adopted. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 540 addresses the issues that have arisen over time when there is a vacancy in nomination for a partisan office. We have seen that come up on a couple of occasions, and the current chapter in Minnesota statutes has a rather checkered history, which I'll go into briefly, and that is it was first proposed in at the time when a gubernatorial candidate, for a variety of reasons that we really don't need to go into here, withdrew from running for office just a couple of weeks before the election, and the there was a substitute candidate from that party who ran actually and won the election, Governor Arnie Carlson. Following that, there was a lot of discussion on under what circumstances should the state, excuse me, should the state permit a candidate for partisan office to withdraw. We also had, in terms of the instances of that, an instance this past summer when another candidate, this time one for the legislature, asked to withdraw when we were well into the campaign season and certainly beyond the 2 days that are currently allowed for someone to withdraw following the end of the filing period. The case did go to the courts, and the courts ruled in favor of the candidate his request to withdraw from the race. So what this bill does is address those issues, and the current law, going back to that history, the current law is in place because that following the session following the election of Governor Arnie Carlson, the legislature did pass a bill and sent it to the governor. It turned out that it was very uncontroversial in the Senate, and it was passed, if not unanimously, almost unanimously. Democrats and Republicans alike supported it. In the House, there was a totally partisan division, the Democrats supporting it and the Republicans opposing it. Subsequent to that, the Governor Carlson vetoed the bill. However, it was one of those bills where the governor at that time, that the governor returned the bill with its veto message to the wrong chamber. When a governor vetoes a bill that goes in as a House file, it has to be returned to the House. When it's a Senate file, it has to be returned to the Senate. And the governor returned any number of bills, including the redistricting bill, to the Senate when they were House files. The issue was taken to the courts by Senator at that time Bill Luther, and the Supreme Court ruled that the vetoes were illegal. So this section of the law with that bill did indeed become law. There has been a group of us, Senator Newman, myself, Representative Simon, that have had conversations with the Secretary of State's office on how to best deal with vacancies and nomination for partisan office, and that is what Senate File 540 does. So it changes the statute that's already in law, but nevertheless that got there by a very unusual route. So in Section 1 in the bill, what it does is to specify that we're talking about partisan offices, and also indicates the circumstances under which we're talking about when someone is withdrawing from the or is withdrawn because they either died or they withdraw according to, and I forgot to bring my statute book over here, Section 204B 12, and also, or that they withdrew by filing their affidavit of withdrawal as provided in the next paragraph. And it that new law states that the affidavit of withdrawal has to be because the candidate has been diagnosed with a catastrophic illness that will permanently and continuously incapacitate the candidate and prevent the candidate from performing his or her duties if they were elected. It has to be accompanied by a certificate that verifies that affidavit and signed by at least two licensed physicians. And it can be either filed by the candidate or, in that instance, or by the candidate's legal guardian. The thrust of this bill is to make sure that simply because there is some sort of scandal attached to a candidate, that they just can't in the middle of something because the political situation has become uncomfortable for them just withdraw on their own. Doesn't mean they can't stop campaigning, obviously, but they just can't withdraw. They can't take their name off of the ballot. It does provide then in Section 2 a way in which a new candidate can be put on the ballot if the withdrawal has been accomplished in a legal way as provided in this bill. It specifies that it is a state or federal partisan office. What happens then is if it occurs within or before, I should say, 79 days before the general election, then the party whose candidate is withdrawn has the option of putting another candidate on the ballot according to rules that they need to develop within their own party organization. The reason for the timing is so that the specific days is so that the local elected officials have the opportunity to prepare a ballot. If the withdrawal, however, occurs after 79 days before the election, the ballots will not be changed, and that election is null and void. And in its place, the governor will call a special election for filling that particular nomination, so that no one is disenfranchised, particularly our military voters who send their ballots back in. That's what the 79 days is for. And everyone who had requested an absentee ballot for the regular election, which will not be held then, or not be counted, I should say, the special election ballots will be sent out to them. So before 79 days, the party has the right to put forward another candidate with withdrawal under those circumstances, and this is not the time when the candidate on his own or her own can withdraw 2 days after the filing period ends without giving any reasoning, just withdraw. It's only after that time, that after the filing period is over and that two-day grace period, that these rules come into effect. So after that time, then, a special election would be held. And the new affidavits of candidacy, if you look following the bill at 234 and 235, may not be accepted. So it is the party who is determining who their candidate will be, and there is no primary. So it just moves right to a special election that is, in effect, a general election. Everybody that was on the ballot before is still on the ballot. The change is that a new candidate is put in place for the candidate that that was withdrawn. And the special election or the political party has 7 days after the general election to state who their candidate is going to be. So let's say someone dies and 50 days before the election, voters go to the polls and the election for that particular office will not be held. The political party has 7 days following the general election to say who their candidate will be in the special election that will be called. No one else may file for that office other than the people who were already filed during the regular filing period. The the filing period in Section 3 just is stating the subdivisions in 204B, 06, 09, and 11 about how people usually get on the ballot and repeating it in this section. With regard to the special circumstances of a governor and lieutenant governor, and now we're getting to Section 4, and I might add that under the amendment, we want to make sure that the voters, when they go to their precincts, understand that the any votes cast on a ballot, the ballot's not changed at all, but any ballots cast in that election do not count. And so we are making sure that a notice is put up in each precinct stating that there is a vacancy in the nomination and a special election will be held. There is a special circumstance, obviously, with regard to governors and lieutenant governors who occur on the same line, you know, run as a team. And so the challenge is, how do we accomplish the same result without getting too complicated? So in the period that's before the 79 days, if a lieutenant governor candidate is withdrawn, then the gubernatorial candidate is the person who chooses who that or who states and affirms who the lieutenant governor candidate will be. If it occurs after that, it's once again subject to there will be another a special election, and there will be that again that period following the general election. Let's say somebody dies the day before. There is that grace period where the a new lieutenant governor candidate is chosen. With regard to this election, however, and to make sure that we again inform the voters, but without any kind of partisan benefit, just saying, well, the candidate for the XYZ party has been withdrawn, and you would in order to give them the information, instead of that, all candidates in that election will be part of the poster put up, and then the notice that results for the governor and lieutenant governor election will be determined in a special election. In Section 5, if that special election, because the candidate was withdrawn after the 79 days, the governor will issue then a writ, just like he would do otherwise for a special election, for that special election to be conducted on the second Tuesday in February following the year in which the vacancy occurred. And in Section 6, with regard to absentee voters, the county auditors will automatically transmit, and I'm looking at 417 and 418, an absentee ballot for the special election if one had been sent out for the election that has been set aside. In Section 7, there is an appropriation. The amendment addresses that it would come from the general fund in the case that a special election has to be called. And if a vacancy in office is due to a nomination, under Section 204(b)(13), that once again the governor shall issue a writ in the manner in which it's called for in that section. And then there is a repealer so that the affected sections that are proposed in this bill can be adopted.
Senator Rest, can you remind me why? What's the key point that occurs 79 days? Is that when the ballots need to be prepared? Or
it's the preparation of the ballots and to be able to make sure that we obey the federal law of being able to get the ballots out so that they, particularly to military and overseas voters, so that they can be returned in a timely fashion before the general election. And if you go any farther than that, closer to the election, that can't happen with a reasonable expectation that the absentee ballots would be returned. It's the reason why, or the federal reason why, we moved the primary election from September to August because of those federal mandates.
Thank you. And do you have any testifiers that you'd like to call forward?
Beth Frazier from the Secretary of State's office is here. She can correct any mistakes I made in presenting the bill, and otherwise is here to answer questions for the of the members if anything remains confused.
Great. Any questions, members, at this time? Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You caught me making notes. Senator Rest, if you could go to the A3 amendment.
To the A3 amendment?
Yeah, okay. The A3 amendment, line 13. it appears to me, and you'd have to excuse me because I hadn't seen this amendment until just a few minutes ago.
We've just been working on it yesterday.
It looks like the Secretary of State is to send out a notice to the county auditors. Is this notice?
This
in effect,
only
going to be a public notice.
Or? This notice is only with regard to the. I mean, this section with only with regard to the when the vacancy occurs for the lieutenant governor, and they would reference the statute. You know, under what circumstances the reason could be under. I don't know where it is in here, but that they die, that they withdraw as provided in 204B12, or with the affidavit from their doctor, so that they would be a reference to the statute. And this can be done through an email to the county auditors. That then specifies this information would be on the poster that would go up in each precinct, so that it would say there is a vacancy that the election for a governor and lieutenant governor, those ballots will not be counted because there's a vacancy in nomination for the lieutenant governor. It will list all the candidates. So that there's no advantage of someone having name recognition from a particular party. And then, and that's in from lines 116 on down, and that there will be a special election for that office. And not just for the lieutenant governor, but for the pair. Yes?
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I'm getting conflicting information. My understanding of it is they would indicate that that election is not going to be take place, correct?
Ms.
If
Frazier.
There's a vacancy in the nomination for lieutenant governor?
No.
Okay, I'm sorry. Understand it incorrectly then. Ms. Frazier.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Beth Frazier with the Office of the Secretary of State. A vacancy in the nomination for lieutenant governor is the one case for a partisan office under this bill where the election actually would go forward, and the gubernatorial candidate needs to name the lieutenant governor candidate. So because this is the one case where the election would go forward,
right.
The amendment was added to put a notice in the polling places to alert voters that it could say something, for example, despite the death of a lieutenant governor candidate, this race is still on. The candidates are as follows, and then it lists all the candidates, not just the pair affected. And it would either list the name of the new lieutenant governor candidate, or if that person had not yet been named, because the gubernatorial candidate has 7 days to name that person, it would say this person will be named by X date. There's another section in the bill that starts on 3-1 that provides a notice in the polling place for all other partisan
things, right.
Elections.
And that's what I was confusing, Senator Newman. I'm sorry about that. So in the other instances, a special election would be called if it was within that 79 days. With the lieutenant governor candidate, that name of the person who's been withdrawn will still be on the ballot, and the election will count. The person, if that particular twosome, wins the election, then the successful gubernatorial candidate has a time period,
seven days.
To indicate who the new lieutenant governor will be.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sorry for the confusion.
That's okay. And we're kind of getting to where my question was,
sure.
And it had to do with the notice. And Ms. Frazier indicated that this would be a notice that would be posted in the polling place. Therefore, it's a public notice of some type.
That's correct.
That the voting public is going to be looking at. And on line 13 of the A3 amendment, it indicates that the Secretary of State is going to include in this notice the reason for the vacancy in nomination. Now, there have been instances in Minnesota's history where there's been, candidates withdraw or don't run for a variety of reasons, some, more salacious than others. And it seems to me that where this notice states the reason for the vacancy should really be tied to the statutory reason for mm-hmm. the vacancy
right.
and not necessarily a reason that the Secretary of State otherwise would frame.
Might want to put in
it
there.
Should be tighter is what I'm saying.
And I absolutely agree with you, and I think that it would be improved, Senate Counsel, if there was a reference, which I did reference in the discussion of it, back to the language that indicates circumstances under which a withdrawal is either acknowledged, that is, somebody dies, or has the affidavit of withdrawal that because of catastrophic illness, or the section, what is this, 204B12 subdivision 1. And the notice should state that, that there's a vacancy in nomination for lieutenant governor according to this part of the statute without any further explanation. And that would take the discretion of how to describe the reason for the vacancy and nomination out of the hands of the Secretary of State. Wonder if Senate Counsel could do that.
Madam Chair and members, I just referencing a statute is perfectly fine. I just want to note that under the bill, the only circumstances under which this could happen after the 79th day is in the case of the death of a lieutenant governor or the catastrophic illness documented by physicians. The other section, point 12, only applies right after the filing period.
That's right. That's the two-day period. So it only needs to reference the addition of that amendment to the A3 amendment, only needs to reference those two reasons.
Counsel?
Doesn't need to reference 204B12 sub 1 because that is, as Ms. Frazier pointed out, the two-day grace period following the filing where anybody can withdraw for any reason or for no reason.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Rest, on line 1.13 of the A3 amendment, after the first "the," insert statutory. And after nomination, insert as provided in subdivision 1, paragraph A, clauses 1 and 3.
Madam Chair, I would offer that amendment to the A3 amendment.
Senator Rest moves that oral amendment. Counsel, will you read it one more time, please?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. On line 1.13 of the A3 amendment, after the first "the," insert statutory, and after nomination, insert as provided in subdivision 1, paragraph A, clauses 1 and 3.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. The amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair and Senator Newman, nice catch. Thank you very much. Madam Chair, Ms. Frazier points out that we might want to make the same kind of correction, if you will, on lines 3.4 which directs the Secretary of State to make a similar kind of provide a similar kind of notice to county auditors. Do you see that, Senator Newman? Madam Chair?
Yes. Looks Senator. Like council's working on it.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Rest, and members. We are on page 3 of the bill. On page 3, line 4, after the first, the insert statutory, and after nomination, insert as provided in subdivision 1, paragraph A, clauses 1 and 3.
Senator Rest moves that oral amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
The amendment is adopted. Any further discussion? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on Senate file 540 as amended? Seeing none, we'll lay over Senate file 540 at this time.
As amended.
As amended.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Rest.
Senator Thieben, welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you, Senator, Mr. Chairman. Could we please take up first Senate File 535?
Yes, Senator Thieben moves Senate File 535 for possible inclusion?
Correct.
Okay.
To be laid over. Members, I believe those of us who are here today have heard an early voting bill in the past, and Senate File 535 is just that. It's an early voting bill, and the main reason that I feel strongly that this is a good public policy for Minnesota to adopt is that many Minnesotans erroneously believe right now that we have early voting in Minnesota. I think it has been proven through the thousands of people who are now voting by absentee ballot, either in person or with an absentee ballot, that they would like the convenience the convenience of being able to vote prior to the traditional election day. And so this bill requires early voting to be available at all primary, general, and special elections for federal, state, or county office. In the bill as proposed before you today, the early voting period would start 15 days prior to the election and run through 5 o'clock on the third day before election day. So I will quickly go through the various sections of the bill. I do have an amendment, which is the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair, if we could adopt that, please.
Okay. Senator Thieben moves the A1 amendment. Do you?
All those in favor.
Well, yeah, I don't know that. I didn't know if she wanted to talk. Well, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, so moved. Senator Thieben, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll just incorporate the amendment in my description of the overall bill. So Section 1 requires just says that the statewide voter registration system would be able to provide reports necessary for early voting. Section 2 provides that just restates that election law applies to early voting. Section 3 is the definition of early voting. Section 4 adds references to early voting to the list of prohibited activities related to absentee voting. Section 5 allows a city clerk of a city or town to administer early voting. And it would be important to note now that this process for determining when the clerk will administer early voting is the same timing as the process for absentee voting. Section 6 provides that an eligible voter may not vote in person, may not vote by in-person absentee ballot during the early voting period. This is because it's obviously cheaper for a vote for a county or a city to administer an in-person early vote rather than what we think of right now as an in-person absentee vote when they go to their county election office and vote by absentee ballot. Some of our testifiers will touch on that in their comments. Section 7 provides a time period for when they must be open to accept absentee ballots for in-person absentee voting. Sections 8 and 9 deal with the a ballot board that would be established under early voting. Section 10 requires the county auditor or clerk to record when a voter casts a ballot under the early voting procedures. Section 11 allows for accepted absentee ballots to be opened after the close of a business day before the early voting period starts. Section 12 requires early voting ballots to be stored and counted in the same way that absentee ballots are. Section 13 provides for an eligible voter to vote in person before election day in the manner described in the bill. 14 states the timeline for early voting right now, or I should say this bill before us, early voting would start 15 days before the election through 5 o'clock on the third day before the election. And then it states that if you're in line, consistent with current election law, if you're in line by 5 o'clock on the last day of early voting, you must be able to vote. Section 15, again, references the times that that early voting would be available. Section 16 is actually different than bills I've carried in the past related to early voting. This bill, members, specifies that early voting would be available at polling places designated in a county auditor office or operated buildings and at the municipal clerk's office. So in other words, in previous bills, it had been up to the discretion of the county auditor or the chief election official to establish voting centers. This bill says that does not allow that. This only allows that early voting would be in places like your county election office or your city city hall, places where you can already go right now to vote by absentee in person. Section 17 requires the auditor to notify people when they can vote and that they have to put it on their websites, and if there's no website, it must be published, which is similar to what they already do for other notification. 18 requires the voter to sign the same-day election certification before they get a ballot, which is similar to what they do right now. Section 19 requires the auditor to prepare and make early voting election materials to the city clerks prior to the start of early voting. And then sections 20, 21, and 22 are related to computer programming and access and testing of equipment. And then section 23 is a blank appropriation right now. We do not have a fiscal note on this bill as presented before us at this time, but if the bill moves forward, we will certainly get that and have that information when we go to the budget divisions. I'd point out, members, too, that in your packet from NCSL, there's a map showing the number of states that already have early voting or either early voting and no excuse absentee voting. You'll notice that the next bill on the agenda is no excuse absentee voting. And I think that really adopting both of these policies subsequently would enhance Minnesota's election system. And as I said earlier, I think that's what the vast majority of Minnesotans would like us to do, keeping in mind that we always need to look for ways to keep intact the integrity of our election system. And I believe that there are things that we can discuss more, if you'd like, that improve the integrity of the election system by adopting these two proposals that are before us. So, Mr. Chair, if it's okay with you, I'd, because we have a number of people who'd like to testify, if we could hear from the proponents or some folks that signed up to testify on the bill now, they'll probably cover things so I don't have to be redundant, too.
Well, thank you, Senator Seaman. I think that's what we would do. If members don't have any pressing questions, we will have discussion at the end of the testifiers. So if we can start to bring our testifiers up. I have Lucy Niebauer and Christine Stone, if they can kind of come up together, and we'll just go by twos after that.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for hearing my testimony. My name is Lucy Niebauer, and I'm a co-chair at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities chapter of the Minnesota Public Interest Research Group, MPIRG. MPIRG is a statewide, student-directed, grassroots, nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that has been working on environmental and social justice issues since 1971. MPIRG has run some of the largest nonpartisan voter registration drives and youth get out the vote campaigns in Minnesota's history. We are well known on our campuses as a resource for students as they prepare for Election Day. Campus departments often contact us to help educate and engage students in our democracy. This fall, I led fellow students for MPIRG's voter registration and get out the vote drive. At the U of M Twin Cities alone, we registered almost 7,000 students to vote. Statewide, MPIRG registered almost double that number. In the days leading up to Election Day, I personally spoke with hundreds of students about their voting plans. Time and time again, I listened as my peers explained the obstacles that barred them from getting to the polls between 7 a.m. and 8 p.m. With a full class load, part-time jobs, and often no access to a car, students are one population for whom voting in person on Election Day can be a serious challenge, and in some cases, impossible. Students who vote on Election Day often risk a loss in their already modest income due to missing a work shift or receiving an unexcused absence from an important class. As a full-time student last semester, I worked 10 hours a week at one part-time job and nearly 20 at another. Throughout my weekday schedule, I have only very short breaks, which do not allow for standing in long lines at my local polling place. This year, I knew I wouldn't have the time to vote in between classes. At 7 o'clock in the morning, when the polls first open, I had to wait nearly 15 minutes before casting my ballot. Later in the day, wait times at that same location spiked to at least 1 hour. Early voting would be an important improvement to Minnesota's voting system and would particularly benefit Minnesota's college students. Increasing the days on which a student could cast their ballot allows for students to vote without jeopardizing their education or income. At MPIRG, we believe that voting should be made convenient and accessible to all eligible voters. We also know that young voters who vote in their first elections for which they are eligible are considerably more likely to be lifelong voters. In order to encourage young Minnesotans to establish positive voting habits, I urge you to vote yes to establish early voting in Minnesota. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Niebauer. Ms. Stone, welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Christine Stone, and I'm a member of the AERP Grass Election Advocacy Team. I get those a little mixed up. Grassroots Election Advocacy Team. And I'm here today as a member of that group testifying. I'm 92 years old. I voted in every election since I turned 21, which was the age you could vote then. In fact, since 1944, I have voted in the same precinct near my home in Maplewood, Minnesota, and I cast my first vote there. I'm here to lend support to the proposals before you today, early voting and no excuse absentee balloting. Seniors take voting very seriously, especially here in Minnesota. Minnesota has a long tradition of ensuring that our voting system is accessible, and we are extremely proud of our level of voter participation. As we look to the future, this proud tradition must continue. AERP supports efforts to improve voting procedures that encourage and promote maximum participation in the voting process by expanding the range of voting choices. We believe that as our state population ages, it is important to continue to modernize our election system and to enable older populations to have easier access to the polls. Many older citizens want to physically go to the polls. I, for one, look forward to Election Day, to getting out of the house and going down and being part of the voting process. I will continue to do that until I absolutely can't do it anymore. But so far, many other Minnesotans getting out of the house on Election Day can be harder than it seems. Finding someone to take you can be a problem. Standing in line is hard. Many seniors are afraid of the unpredictable weather we have. Others are afraid of falling or of getting sick. I know there will come a time when I might not be able to get to the polls, but I feel that these two bills would be a big help right at this point. That's why AERP believes that early voting and no excuse absentee balloting go hand in hand and are important tools for older voters. Much like pre-boarding an airplane, those tools allow older folks more time to vote under less stressful conditions. Many older voters currently use absentee ballots. However, our state law permits voters to vote absentee only under a limited set of circumstances, not including unpredictable access to transportation or fear of weather. These, I think, would make it much more simple for our seniors and older people, disabled people also. Across the country, the majority of states have enacted both early voting and no excuse absentee balloting. In 32 states and the District of Columbia, any qualified voter may cast a ballot in person during a designated early voting period prior to election. No excuse or justification is required. 27 states and the District of Columbia offer no excuse absentee voting. Allow any registered voter to request an absentee without requiring that the voter state a reason for his or her desire to vote absentee. We believe it's time for Minnesota to enact these common sense voting changes too. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Stone. I think next up we have Jeremy Schrader, and then we have Ann Lindstrom, Deb Magnum, and Tom Ferber. I don't know if you guys can kind of come to the witness table if they're here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeremy Schrader, and I'm the Executive Director of Common Cause Minnesota, a nonpartisan government watchdog group. I am here today to express Common Cause's strong support for early voting in Minnesota and for Senate File 535. A lot of my testimony was covered by the last two speakers, so I will be very brief.
Thank you.
Nationally, 32 states and the District of Columbia currently have some form of early voting. This number has been growing over the last few election cycles because early voting helps minimize the numerous problems citizens have while casting their vote. For example, the extra time afforded by early voting helps take the pressure off an election system by reducing the flood of voters that come out one day. Second, an early voting process allows individuals to resolve problems with their voter eligibility. under the current system in Minnesota, voters have a very small window of time to work out any issues that with their current registration record. Early voting would give them the time to fix these problems in a reasonable amount of time. On a more personal note, I moved to Minnesota from Illinois, a state that's had early voting for quite some time. I used early voting in numerous elections, and I can tell you the process is just like Election Day. My registration to vote was verified, I was able to cast my ballot, and I got my I Voted sticker. It cut down on the lines in Election Day, and Illinois has since expanded its early voting beyond the initial polling places to also include college campuses. Democracy works best when we are all allowed to participate, and voting is the most important way that we can do that. Voting should be as easy as possible for everyone. Senate File 535 would help Minnesotans use their right to vote, and I urge you to vote yes on Senate File 535.
Thank you, Mr. Shredden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Ann Lindstrom with the League of Minnesota Cities. The League of Minnesota Cities supports the adoption of legislation establishing an early voting process developed in cooperation with local officials. The policies that we have at the League are greatly informed by city officials and those who have direct experience with administering elections, and that includes our elections task force. And with me today are our co-chairs, Deb Mangan and Tom Ferber, who can speak more to the specifics of our support.
Mr. Ferber, Ms. Mankin, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Tom Ferber, and I am co-chair of the Joint Minnesota Municipal Clerks and Finance Officers Association and League of Minnesota Cities Elections Task Force. The Minnesota Municipal Clerks and Finance Officers Association is a 700-member organization that represents a lot of city clerks, most of which are election officials. And we work in conjunction with the League of Minnesota Cities to develop policies related to elections through our elections task force. I am here to express the support of our task force for Senate File 535 to establish early voting in Minnesota statutes. Early voting is not a new concept or an idea. As part of my master's thesis many, many years ago, I researched the success of early voting concepts in several states, such as Texas. In fact, if you ask most people in the general public or even in local media, they would likely tell you that Minnesota already has early voting. However, we know that that is not the case. Statute provides for absentee voting, but not early voting. Over the years, Minnesota's absentee voting provisions have been transformed from its original purpose into one that is used more for convenience or early voting, or what we would call early voting. This has not been a transformation brought about by election officials. It is a transformation by the voters and the media. Estimates from city clerks and metro area indicate that the majority of their voter inquiries prior to an election are about early voting. When it is explained that Minnesota does not have early voting but has absentee voting, they are frustrated and indicate they just don't want to stand in line or have other issues on election day or other explanations that does not fit the statutory requirements to allow for them to be an absentee voter. People see the increasing access to all types of services and expect access to voting to be more accessible than just on election day for 13 hours. We agree with our voters and recognize the advantage of early voting to increase the accessibility to voting and to reduce the costs associated with absentee voting. Ms. Mangan will discuss some of the improvements to the voting process and how that might impact us.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. I'm Deborah Mangan, Edina City Clerk. I'm co-chair of the Election Advisory Board and League of Minnesota Cities, and I'm also vice president of the Minnesota Clerks and Finance Officers Association. I'd like to reiterate our support of the Election Advisory Board of Senate for Senate File 535 to establish early voting in Minnesota. In January, I testified before the committee that approximately half of Edina's election budget is spent in the administration of absentee ballots during each election cycle. In 2008, when Edina counted 7,316 absentee ballots, half of them, or 3,658, were from in-person absentee voters. In 2012, we counted 5,689 absentee ballots. Half of those were from in-person absentee voters, 2,845 ballots. During my best calculations, I estimate that early voting would save approximately $5 per ballot cast. So using my 2008 and 2012 in-person figures, that would equate to a savings in 2008 for my city of $18,290, and in 2012, $14,222. More importantly than the cost savings, however, is the assurance that each in-person absentee voter would have of putting their ballot into the ballot box and being assured that if they made a mistake, they'd have an opportunity to correct that, knowing when they left that their ballot had been counted. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Justin Page and James Hager. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Justin Page, and I'm a staff attorney at the Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid and the Minnesota Disability Law Center. At the Minnesota Disability Law Center, we represent individuals with all types of disability throughout the state of Minnesota. I am here today to testify in support of Senate File 535. Unfortunately, individuals with disabilities vote at a much lower rate than the general population. We believe that Senate File 535 will make it easier for individuals with disabilities to vote, and its adoption will encourage people with disabilities to more fully engage in the voting process. Current law allows people with disabilities to vote early via absentee voting, either in person or through the mail. The law correctly recognizes that people with disabilities may have a difficult time getting to the polls on election day for a number of reasons, including lack of accessible and available transportation. We believe the early voting bill being proposed today will benefit individuals with disabilities by allowing those who choose to vote in-person absentee to vote like everybody else and more fully participate in the voting process. Currently, individuals with disabilities voting in-person absentee fill out the paperwork for an absentee ballot, then fill out the ballot and hand it to an election official, where it is not counted until the polls close on election day. If there is an error in the person's ballot or paperwork, there is no guarantee that his or her vote will be counted. However, if early voting were implemented, individuals with disabilities would be able to go into the early voting location and vote, then put his or her vote or ballot into the ballot counter, ensure that his or her vote is counted. Finally, we believe that that early voting will save money by reducing the need for as many absentee ballots. And in time of high budget deficits and shrinking resources for programs individuals with disabilities rely on, we believe it is good policy to implement election reforms such as early voting, which reduce costs, increase efficiency, and allow individuals with disabilities to more fully engage in the voting process. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify, and I ask the committee members to support Senate File 535.
Thank you, Mr. Page, for your testimony. Mr. Hager, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is James Hager, and I'm here to testify on behalf of Education Minnesota and Minnesota's 70,000 educators, and to ask you to support Senate File 535 and to institute an early voting system. We support early voting because it will simplify and modernize elections for the people of Minnesota, and it will make it easier for working Minnesotans to vote. In preparation for this hearing, I spoke with several educators from around the state. What they uniformly told me is that they are incredibly busy people who, like many Minnesotans, find it increasingly difficult to fit voting into their schedules. To make it clear, our members do vote. They vote at 10 to 15% higher rates than the general public. That said, just because they make it to the polls is not an indication that the system is working well. Every one of the members I spoke with is either at or on the way to work at 7 a.m. on Tuesday mornings. After they leave school, they inevitably spend part of their evening grading tests, reading papers, or preparing for class the next day. That doesn't count driving home, picking up their kids, making dinner, or taking care of their house or pets. All of this leaves very little time for voting. While the act itself is pretty quick and easy, if there are lines or if they need to look up their polling place, it can add a serious time to the process. The options available to other people, going during lunch or a break, are not options for our members. And the often cited two-hour break employers are required to give people on election day for the purpose of voting is not something our members could even consider. To do that would require a substitute, preparing for that substitute, and adjusting their own lesson plans and structures, which is something that no teacher relishes. And it might not even be possible to find a substitute, given that you'd be asking them to come in for such a short time frame. In short, this is all to say that in this day and age, our members, like so many people in this room and around the state, are very busy. And voting on a Saturday or an evening a week or two before the election is an important option to give them. It reflects the state of our society. It's a common sense modernization that would give voters in our state the same opportunity that voters in 32 other states have. It would likely increase turnout, and it would allow people to take part in our democracy in a way that makes sense for them and allows them to engage without being a burden. In closing, Mr. Chair and members, we support Senate File 535 because it would modernize our election system and make it easier for working Minnesotans, including educators, to vote. We encourage you to vote on this bill and move it out of committee, and please move it forward so that our democratic system can move forward as well. Thank you for this opportunity, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Hagar, for your testimony. Next up, we have Margot Mdimke-Cross and Dan McGrath.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Margot Mdimke-Cross, and I'm the Accessibility Specialist with the Minnesota State Council on Disability. I'm here today to urge your support for Senate File 535. Approximately 20% of the population under the age of 65 has a disability as defined by the Americans with Disabilities Act. For those individuals over the age of 65 and older, that number rises dramatically to over 50%. There are many reasons individuals with disabilities will benefit from an early voting period. As indicated by a previous speaker, transportation is an issue for people with disabilities. Many of us rely on paratransit systems to get to and from our destinations. On election day, it's very difficult for the transportation providers to come up with enough vehicles to get everybody to their destination. And I know that in many instances they have to bring on extra buses, hire extra drivers, and it gets to be an expensive day for many. Limited resources becomes an issue. With sign language interpreters being in limited supply and assistance to take people to the polls. And if that could be spread out over a period of time and incorporated into an early voting period, I think this would be not such a demand on limited resources. And, of course, inclement weather becomes an issue. In the last election, I know of several wheelchair users who sat in the rain because the line for voting went all the way around their building. They sat in the rain for over an hour before they mustered the courage to break the line and go to the front of the line, and that worked out, but it took him over an hour to muster that courage. Early voting would have provided an excellent option to those long lines and to those very wet voters. With early voting, the nice thing about early voting is, of course, if you fill out the ballot improperly, it's caught immediately. And that's really a nice assurance for many of us with disabilities who might have vision issues, might have cognitive issues, might have other issues, where we really do want to insert that ballot into the box and know that we filled it out properly. Polling locations, we want to make sure that polling locations are predetermined in this bill. We want to make sure that they're accessible. because there may be some city halls out there and other county official buildings that aren't fully accessible. So we want to make sure that the locations are accessible, and we want to make sure that the notice to the voters is provided in an accessible format. So those are things that we are concerned about, but yet we are very, very supportive of the bill, and we would like to make sure or urge your support for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I also am going to call Jennifer Schaubach up. I kind of inadvertently skipped you. I'm sorry. But Mr. McGrath, you can welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Dan McGrath, president of Minnesota Majority. I'm going to shift gears a little bit here and testify wholeheartedly in the strongest terms against Senate File 535. Besides being extraordinarily dangerous for the integrity of our election system, this bill is unconstitutional. Article 7, Section 7 of the Minnesota Constitution reads, "The official year for the state of Minnesota commences on the first Monday in January. In each year, and all terms of office terminate at that time." This is the important bit.
Thank you.
"The general election shall be held on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November in each even-numbered year." Shall be held on the first Tuesday. We simply cannot conduct general election voting prior to or after the constitutionally designated election day. The Constitution doesn't permit elections to be held for weeks. They take place on one day, the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November in an even-numbered year. Even if the bill were constitutional, which it most certainly is not, the proposal is a threat to the integrity of our already weak election system. We simply cannot have every single election convenience to make voting easier, and at the same time have none of the features that other states employ to make cheating harder. Unless our objective, of course, is to be governed by the candidates and parties who cheat the best. Some states have early voting. Some have no excuse absentee voting. Some have election day registration. Some use vouching. Some vote by mail. No state combines all of these features, as well as having no identification requirement. All this bill accomplishes is to make the window for fraud exponentially wider, while casting aside the meager protections that we do have in place in the form of citizen oversight and partisan poll challengers. How can we possibly expect to staff polling locations for weeks on end with partisan poll observers when we can't, the parties have a hard enough time getting enough volunteers out on one day to accomplish that? So citizen oversight, partisan oversight goes out the window if we employ early voting. I don't believe there's any way to make this bill workable, and I will urge the members of the committee to vote against this serious threat to the integrity of our election system. That will conclude my remarks. Happy to answer any questions when testimony is complete.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. McGrath. Ms. Schaubach, if you could come to the table. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jennifer Schaubach. I am the legislative director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO. We are a labor federation made up of more than 1,000 affiliate unions representing more than 300,000 working people throughout the state. I'm here today in support of Senate File 535, establishing an early voting system in Minnesota. The Minnesota AFL-CIO has been active in the Voting Rights Coalition since it began in 2000 with a very small group of folks from nonprofits, faith groups, and labor who are interested and still are interested in modernizing and simplifying our and protecting our voting rights. In addition to educators, as you heard from James Hager earlier, we have railroad crew members, construction workers, electricians, pipe fitters, boilermakers, and the list goes on. Several of these occupations require travel and work odd hours, which makes it difficult to predict exactly when they'll be in the state or their city, let alone their precinct, to vote on election day. The only way to make sure they are able to vote and their vote will be counted is to vote early. Early voting would ease congestion at precincts on election day. No matter which way you lean politically, no matter which candidates you support, I would hope that you would all support early voting. The Minnesota AFL-CIO supports Senate File 535 and asks you to vote yes to modernizing and simplifying our election system by establishing an early voting system in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, I think we should open for questions or discussion. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'd just like to reiterate some points that were made by the testifiers. The first that I think is something we can't ignore is the simple fact that Minnesotans are voting right now prior to Election Day. In fact, I have a flyer here that was was distributed by one of the major political parties for this last election that I didn't distribute because I didn't want to make it too partisan, but it says, "This year's election is too important to put to chance. Make sure your vote counts by voting early today." And then it goes on to explain that there are two ways to vote early: one, absentee voting in person, or two, absentee voting by mail. Neither of these examples, or the flyer on either side, explains — that was again distributed by a major party — explains that there are conditions right now on voting early here in Minnesota as defined by state statute. So I think we're at a critical moment. If even the major political parties are encouraging our constituents to go out and vote, and in fact, you know, crossing the line here on whether they're breaking the law, because current law does not allow people to vote early unless it's they're giving a verifiable reason, as we'll discuss in the next bill. We're behind the times here. We're behind the times in terms of, you look at the number of people who had to wait in line this past election, which can be attributed to a number of factors. But I think on Election Day, for instance, in my own precinct, there was a long line of voters when I went to vote that were just standing there waiting. Why, as Minnesotans, who we pride ourselves on having a strong election system and a good system on good government, why should we require Minnesotans to wait in line to cast a ballot? It just seems so nonsensical and antiquated. So with that, I guess I'll reiterate that I've said to my colleagues on the committee that I'm very willing to work with you as members of the committee if there are additional parameters that you would like to see implemented to make this a workable solution, whether it be shortening the amount of time that early voting is available, other things that you see are real. If you foresee problems with the current bill, I'm very willing to work with you on that, because I think that this is pressing enough that we get it done yet this session.
Thank you, Senator Sieben. I guess, as custom in this committee, if there's anybody else in the audience that hasn't had a chance to testify, if they would come forward now. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Senator, and thank you, members. My name is Catherine Dorr. I am a resident of Minneapolis. I am also a Minneapolis election judge. I would like to give the perspective in support of us election judges who hopefully will see this bill come to be. As stated by the MPRG testifier and the Edina City Clerk, where I served in a precinct in Minneapolis as an election judge, we had tremendous lines and tremendous amount of wait times for voting. My precinct is Ward 3, Precinct 3 at Marcy School. I also am friends with the election judges in the adjoining precincts in Dinkytown and the U of M Medical School. So all three precincts are immediately adjacent or nearby the university. Our wait times in the three precincts were between 1 hour and 3 hours. I believe that early voting to serve this heavily student population would be a great convenience to these very busy students and our residents. It would tremendously cut down on the wait times. In addition, the students, like she said, are extremely busy, and many of them had to go out of line and go back home to retrieve the necessary documents. Providing a time period ahead of Election Day would benefit these students and increase their participation. And lastly, I'd like to recount just very briefly the experience I had on a hotline 1 year answering voter questions. This was at 7:30. A woman called in who lived out in the forests of rural Minnesota and had no transportation to get to the polls. She desperately wanted to vote. This was in, I believe, 2008. And I felt so helpless because there was nothing I could do to help her. Early voting would have allowed that woman to vote. Unfortunately, the only person she could get to take her to the polls was her boyfriend, who she had a restraining order against. So this would early voting would mitigate so many problems that we are seeing now and increase citizen participation and cut down on our wait times, which we all know were a problem last year. Thank you very much, and I urge your support for the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Knorr, for your testimony.
Hi, my name is Sue Jeffers. I'm an election judge in New Brighton.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Jeffers.
Thank you. I would like to suggest that you fire all the election judges in Minneapolis. Nobody should ever have to wait for 1 to 3 hours, let alone out in the rain. They clearly need new training. This is a horrible bill. Horrible bill. What most people want in Minnesota is honest elections. This isn't about making it easy so you have time to go home and take care of your pet. Are you kidding me? Oh, as an election judge, I'm telling you, this is a bad bill. We want honest elections. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Doesn't look like we have any more testifiers, so members, I guess if there's questions about the bill. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Sieben, Mr. McGrath made a reference to a constitutional element in his discussion. And knowing that, we've had some type of early voting allowance in our statutes. This is the first time I've known of a constitutional reference to an election day, despite the fact that we have statute written to allow early voting for an excuse. So how did we get to that? Do you know?
No, I don't. Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, I thought that was a good point that Mr. McGrath raised, in that I hadn't been aware of that before. Perhaps counsel could give me some guidance here or help.
Ms. Dangle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, and Senator Limmer. The Constitution does set the election day, as Mr. McGrath read to the committee earlier, and this bill doesn't change that election day. We are still having election day as it stands, as it always has been. This is just allowing, much as we do now, for absentee voting to happen prior to that. I haven't done a great deal of research on court cases from other jurisdictions that have upheld or struck down early voting. I'm happy to do that and provide the information to the committee soon.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
I think it would be important, Mr. Chair, to see if there's case law on this to determine if there is an allowance for it. Otherwise, we might be in a more of a constitutional issue than we ever dreamed.
Well, Senator Limmer, it looks like Ms. Frazier has also approached the table. And Senator Sieben, did you want to?
I think that was a good point, and that in the bill, one of the sections references that the definition of early voting. But again, as Ms. Stengel said, there's nothing that alters that election day as determined in all of our statutes relating to elections. For instance, Senator Rest bill that backs up from election day to 79 days before, still keeping that election day is that Tuesday in November.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Frazier.
And members, Beth Frazier from the Office of the Secretary of State. And I don't believe that this changes election day. Election day is the day on which the ballots are counted. And in the early voting bill, the ballots are not counted before the polls close at 8 p.m. on election day. The same is true with absentee ballots currently cast. They are not counted until the polls close. So election day is the day on which the ballots are counted.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just disagree. I think there is a major difference between early voting and absentee voting. In absentee voting, the ballot is marked and then held until election day when it is counted. On an early vote, it is actually processed and the part of counting is begun because it's put into a ballot box in that process, and those votes are actually counted. They're in that process. On election day, in an absentee ballot, you're able to supersede that by coming in on election day and casting an absentee and cast a ballot in person. Or even in some cases where there have been issues, you're able to supersede a previous absentee ballot. An early vote, that is not the case. It is cast, it is counted, and I think this is a very important question that has constitutional bearing and should be researched further, because there is a big difference between the casting and the actual counting. And the fact that on election night you actually do the reporting of those ballots, but those are issues that I think are very distinct.
Senator Restituto.
Mr. Chair. And
Ms. Frazier.
Senator Kiffmeyer and members, the law was actually changed in 2010 so that absentee ballots are processed. The envelopes are opened and the ballots are put into the machine at any time after 5 p.m. on Friday before the election. And so at that point, there is no superseding your absentee ballot. The ballot is final. It is put into the machine, but the ballots are not counted. We do not know who has more votes until 8 p.m. on election night when the ballots are counted, when the machine totals the votes. Just like we don't know throughout the day at noon, we may know 10 people have voted, but we don't know how they voted. We don't know until 8 p.m. Similarly, ballots are fed into the machines from 5 p.m. on Friday onward. People cannot cast another ballot, but we do not know how they voted because their votes are not counted until the polls close.
Well, Mr. Chair, then it makes the question about that law as well. I don't think it changes the constitutional question or the distinction that we're talking about. There are a lot of things that are on statute that sometimes come to light in that regard, but it's the fruit of the tree, you might say. But I think the point still stands.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, it occurs to me that what has been cited here is the Minnesota Constitution. And I am looking at the map that Senator Sieben handed out, where there are numerous other states who have early voting and no-excuse absentee ballots. And it seems to me that we don't have any idea what the Constitution in those various states say with regard to an election day. And we really don't know if there is any Supreme Court rulings on point, much as I understand Ms. Frazier's expertise in this area. I'm not sure that I would want to rely on that rather than Supreme Court ruling. So my request would be is that Senate counsel for the committee look into this and give us some guidance as to whether or not this issue has ever been addressed by the Minnesota Supreme Court and whether or not there are any Supreme Court decisions from foreign jurisdictions, i.e. other states, that would give us some guidance on this issue. Because I do think that this is a pretty significant issue that just came up.
Senator Ross.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was going to recall the 2010 legislation, and, you know, I think it when it was passed there, it was passed I think unanimously in the Senate and almost unanimously in the House, and signed by Governor Pawlenty. Was a bill that was extremely well vetted, and a constitutional issue was not raised. You know, with regard to absentee ballots, if somehow they're going to come into question, Senator Lemmer, you are disenfranchising every single member of the military from Minnesota that serves overseas. I don't think you want to go there.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Senator Lemmer.
I don't know why my intent is being questioned right now, Senator Rest.
No, that's the result of it.
All I'm asking for, Senator Rest, is a clarification of a constitutional prerogative. We can't write statute contrary to the Constitution, even though 100% of the legislators write it. I'm just asking a question because I want to make sure I follow the law. At least I follow the law, Senator Rest. And I think it's important to have this discussion.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
and you don't have to tell me that I don't have to go there.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Limmer, if we could work through the chair now, I think that's customary in the Senate.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is a question about protocol and the rules of the Senate. I'm not going to sit here and be questioned about motive or being warned where I have to go on a public discussion.
Mr. Chairman, that was not my intent. I was trying to indicate what the scope of the importance of the absentee ballots are. And the reason why we changed a lot of law recently, Senator Limmer, has been because of our response to the federal government in protecting the right of the military and other overseas Americans to participate as fully as possible in our elections. And when I was saying you, I was really meaning us. If we are starting to challenge the absentee ballots on a constitutional issue, I think that is I really do think that's a very dangerous place for us to go, because that's certainly not not what's been coming down from the Supreme Court or the federal government with regard to absentee ballots. It's been to expand that, and I mean, we don't allow them to vote electronically yet. Some states do, but I think that that law that we passed has not been challenged by anyone as being constitutional. Maybe Mr. McGrath is going to file a suit. It'd be very interesting to see what the Supreme Court says about it. And, you know, and I'm saying all this, and I'm, as Senator Sieben knows, I'm not a huge fan of early voting at all. I believe philosophically in the simultaneity of the voting experience, and as far as possible, it ought to all occur on election day as far as we can. And she has said, you know, she entertains the notion of just how long that period of early voting can be. Some states have 30 days. I think that's bad public policy. 15 days is in my mind also stretching it, but. But we did pass a law that says when those votes, the absentee votes, begin to be counted, and that was done at the, as I recall, Senator Sieben, Ms. Fraser, wasn't that? It was done in a lot to respond to the local elections officials to allow. Efficient counting of the ballots, and as I recall, the if you got to the polls on election day before your ballot was counted, you could change it. You could vote in person, but if you got there after your ballot had been put through the machine, you're out of luck. So I think that was the place we left it, unless. I got confused on that one, too, Ms. Fraser. Is that correct, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Fraser?
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, that was the rule prior to 2010. But the current rule is that as of 5 p.m. on Friday, before your absentee ballot, if it's been accepted, will be counted.
Second. Senator Kiffmeyer, but before we go there, I did want to say that Ms. Stengel, Senate Counsel, said that she is going to research and prepare a memo for members of the committee and the public, I imagine, on this very issue of constitutionality. So I just wanted to make sure we knew that for the record. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr.
Mr. Chairman, to that point,
Senator,
my request for the research on the constitutional issue had to do with this bill, which is early voting, and not the absentee ballot, which is a different bill and, in my mind, a different issue. I just wanted to make that clarification.
But there wouldn't be a case in
that. So, Senator Newman, we're going to lay this bill over when we're through with the discussion, but I just wanted to make sure you knew that we were going to get some research on that. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In regards to that, I remember in the tragic situation of Senator Wellstone's death prior to the election, I remember a long-standing statute that an absentee voter through the mail could get a replacement ballot, but if an absentee voter came in person, they could not, roughly. This is summarizing legal question that came before the court. And I joined with the DFL party at that time as Secretary of State in asking the court that there was unequal treatment of the voters and to overturn that statute, because I felt that that was unequal treatment of the voters. So, again, I just want to give you an example of something that had been in statute a long time, ended up in a situation where it did become a constitutional question, did go to the state Supreme Court, and was overturned. So just because it's there a while doesn't mean like, well, now forevermore and in the future it stands as if it is. That is not the case in any case law.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer. I think I would say that, I mean, almost everything we do probably could, someone could challenge, and that we could go to Supreme Court and we could figure out what would happen. So I think your point is valid, but I also think that we could do that on almost just about anything that we do here as we move forward. With that being said, is there any more questions of the members?
Mr. Chairman, I do want to just clarify one other thing, because I just don't want to leave the record here. And that is, Senator Sieben, you probably weren't meaning it, but when a piece of literature from a campaign or something is brought forward, and the impugning of it at this time was that somebody was doing something wrong or maybe illegal or questioning that, I just really want to say, Mr. Chairman, that I think we should either say it or don't. But impugning somebody's possible intention or piece of literature, especially without the context or some of the other things that were going on, I just don't want this committee hearing to go on without just saying that may or may not be the case, but I want to just really caution us from doing that, because it may not be quite taken as well as maybe you were intending.
Senator Kiffmeyer, Senator Sieben. I'm happy to show you the piece of literature. I didn't pass it out because I didn't want to turn it into something bigger than it is, only to point out the fact that it's prepared and paid for by a major political party of Minnesota. And it says there are two ways to vote early. It doesn't reference Minnesota statute in any way, saying you have to go here to see if you meet the qualifications to vote by absentee ballot, in person, or by mail. And so, again, my point is not to impugn the integrity of this political party, just to say the simple fact is this is happening right now. Parties are saying go and vote early and encouraging their voters or their people that they think will vote for them to vote early. I'm happy to pass it around, though, if you want to look at it. And I mean, that's what I'd have to say, is just that, well, I think we're behind the times in that if parties are encouraging voters to go and vote early, and potentially not making any reference to there are certain parameters in which you should cast an in-person absentee ballot as defined by Minnesota law, that is questionable. And I'll stand by that.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Sieben, in a different vein entirely.
Thank you.
You're welcome. In a different vein entirely, you had indicated that you would certainly be willing to talk about some ideas to maybe strengthen the bill, the early voting bill. And I really don't have anything specific in mind, but I would indicate that I would want to maybe visit with you, and maybe you could come up with some ideas. My principal concern about the early voting is to protect the integrity of this of the system, such that we are not going to have a system in which people are going to vote twice, or they are going to, you know, somehow scam the system. And one of the testifiers that came up and testified in opposition to the bill, that was one of his major concerns, was that we just don't have the protections in place to make sure that we have voting integrity. So I'm just throwing it out there. I don't have any specific ideas, you know, as I sit here, but I will tell you that that is my major concern with respect to early voting, is how do we protect ourselves against those who are going to try and beat the system?
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, I appreciate your comments. I would say that keep in mind that the scope of this bill right now would encompass early voting only at locations that a person can already go to vote in-person absentee. So, again, we're not setting up early voting centers and shopping malls as occur in other states, on college campuses or in any other place that county election official could designate. I think that that inherently keeps the integrity of the system intact. And what I would say to the testifier who brought up the that point was that right now, you know, hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans in general elections are voting in-person absentee or by absentee ballot. And I think that actually having them vote in person early, where they're casting a regular ballot instead of an absentee ballot, puts more safeguards into ensuring that that vote is cast with in the fairest way possible. We heard someone from the disability community attest to the fact that then the voter can know that their vote, when they feed it into a ballot counter, is accepted or rejected. And when you're voting in person by absentee ballot right now, you don't get that assurance that your vote is actually counted. There are other provisions in the bill that that ensure that the roster is marked. One drawback to this proposal that has been referenced a little bit is that you would not, as a voter, be able to come back and change your vote. So, for instance, if you voted early now under this proposal 4 or 5 days before the election, you went to the city clerk's office in Cottage Grove and or at the Washington County Government Center and voted early in person, and you changed your mind based on a presidential debate or something that was happening at the last minute, you wouldn't be able to go back and change your vote, because your vote has been tabulated at that time, not reported, obviously, but your ballot has been accepted. So I think that, and that's just a question that voters will have to weigh in their own minds. We heard in the last, from the city of Minneapolis, that in the last general election, one voter did do that, voted by absentee ballot and then decided they wanted to change their vote. Under this proposal, that wouldn't happen. I don't think that that happens enough to really, make it not a proposal that, a good proposal that should move forward. Mr.
Chairman, may I ask one quick follow-up? Thank you. Just a hypothetical question. Maybe you and Ms. Frazier can humor me here. Hypothetical question. We under this proposal, an early voter would be able to go in and same-day register just like they would in any other type of a situation. And so in my hypothetical case, someone goes in to and wants to early vote at the auditor's office and is vouched for. And the voter that we're dealing with is really not all that upstanding of a citizen. So on election day, that same voter shows up at his or her precinct, we're supposed to, you know, is legally allowed to vote at, and gets vouched for. Is the system going that you are proposing going to catch up such that when that not such a great citizen shows up on election day to vote for the second time, is the system going to be able to react quick enough to catch him at it?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, yes, it would. I mean, the proposal requires that the roster be marked so that when the voter shows up at the polling place, the election judges would see that the person had already cast a ballot that had been counted and would say, I'm sorry, but you've already voted, you'll need to leave, and would not be given another ballot. In fact, the proposal requires that the local election officials use the statewide voter registration system to track people who have voted early, which would even mean that if I lived in Hennepin County and if I went down to the city of Minneapolis and cast an early vote, and, you know, they would process me, they would mark it in the statewide voter registration system that I had voted early, that if I went to Hennepin County later that afternoon and tried to vote again, they would pull up my record and say, oh, I'm sorry, you've already voted early, you cannot cast another ballot. I mean, that's one of the keys to this proposal, is that it does require the use of a statewide database to which all county auditors and which certain municipal clerks have access, and it limits early voting to jurisdictions that have that access and the expertise in using the system. The other thing I would say, as Senator Sieben was pointing out, is that early voting is in-person voting. And to quote my friend Dan McGrath, in-person voting is the gold standard when it comes to voter integrity. And so, I mean, this is, I think, the direction that we should be going, if that's your primary concern.
Senator Cole.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I could inquire of Senator Newman, and although I've just been here for a couple of minutes, with my meetings that were going on, I was listening on the monitor, the television, to the debate. And of course, it's interesting that we have on the committee both of the chief authors of you know, last year's legislation. And so both Senator Newman and yourself, Senator Kiffmeyer, and Senator Kiffmeyer yourself when you were Secretary of State, have dealt with these issues extensively. And it struck me in listening to some of the testimony, again, on the television, and then just, Senator Newman, listening to yourself, that it's a revisiting of a lot of the issues relative to photo ID, not so much early voting. And it's not my intent to get into a debate again about photo ID, and obviously we know what happened in November, but and certainly you spoke strongly and eloquently during the course of debate last year relative to the photo ID. But I can't quite wrap my arms around why early voting would be, as you just suggested in your questions to Senator Sieben, would be, I don't know, rife with problems. You know, if you're voting, and I think Senator Sieben pointed out the strongest protection is that this legislation does not contemplate setting up other voting locations, as has been the case in some other states, where you could vote at some place that was more convenient. So since you're voting at the same polling place, it just allows for that much more of an opportunity for citizens to vote who might have a difficult work schedule on election day, who might have family problems, where maybe they know that, you know, maybe somebody is scheduled for surgery on election day, and they can't, and they're going to have to be at the hospital with family members or something. So I'm not quite sure what the problem would be with the early voting. I understand the photo ID. Now, obviously, I disagreed, but I understand the theory behind photo ID. This one, I don't understand why there would be any opposition to it.
Senator Cohen, the answer to your question is I am not necessarily objecting to early voting. I tried to phrase my question to Ms. Frazier and to Senator Sieben in the form of trying to educate me. This is a new form of voting in the state of Minnesota that is being proposed, and I am simply trying to be well informed as to how it is going to work before I say I am going to agree with it or not. So it's all I was doing, Senator Cohen, was asking a question.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I didn't mean to suggest that, and that was certainly clear from the question. So maybe my question back to you was maybe more rhetorical than directed at yourself. but it does strike me that as I've read about and understood early voting in other places around the country, I have wondered, you know, where you set up early voting at the shopping center or whatever, that there might be more of an opportunity for duplicate voting or whatever. That if I'm, you know, if I live in St. Paul, but I go vote at the shopping center in Rosedale, a little bit, you know, it might be tough to get that back to my precinct in Highland Park. So it strikes me that this legislation is pretty narrowly drafted in that respect.
Members, I do want to remind us that we have one more bill left. I know that Senator Cohen has kind of opened the discussion kind of broadly, and so as we move forward, I do want us to know that we have one more bill, so as if we can kind of succinctly state our points and counterpoints so that we can get done with our business for the day. Senator Newman.
I have nothing further, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think to also chime in on the response to that, understanding that one of the questions that was brought up, we currently have vouching. And so it isn't a matter of if you use the same name. That's not the thing. Yes, that system might do that, but you don't. You also have the other election laws, which in Minnesota, you have other situations. And now you not only have one election day with election day registration and those opportunities and everything that goes with election day, now you spread that into many election days, supposedly. And the open door of the locations that this is tight right now. But we understand that the next legislative session can say, well, we're just going to do it one little more broader, and more you start opening the opportunity here. And the check and the balance of the whole thing, plus in addition to the vouching and the other things that we have, especially when we already have in place a system that can address many of the things that the testifiers talked about, even including the ballot scanner can be available there for absentee voting. It doesn't have to be restricted to just an early vote as far as a tool of use for in-person and the ballots that come there. So, but I think my biggest thing is that it's not in isolation, and it's not like if somebody is using the same name at two different times.
Senator Ress.
Senator Kempmeyer raises an interesting point for me because I'm not sure this answer or not sure how that works with early voting in your bill, Senator Sieben. Can someone come to do early voting and register at the same time and do that through being vouched for?
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, under the proposal, that would be allowable because you would be able to still have register on the same day and then cast a ballot.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Sieben, and it could be your registration could be, what do you want to call it, verified or by someone vouching for you, just like it would be on election on the general election day in November. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, I'm not confident that is indeed the case, because I remember testimony last year in regards to the photo ID bill that said it takes all this time to go check all these systems. So either one is true or the other is not. So I'm really, now I'm like, what's the situation? I think that exposes itself in this very discussion some pretty serious concerns and issues that are arising in regards to this. It's not so simple as you would think.
So thrust the article.
With no further comments, Senator Sieben renews her motion. Or actually, Senator Sieben, do you have kind of the final word, or are you ready to move here?
I'm ready to move it.
Okay. Senator Sieben moves that SF 535, as amended, be laid over. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
So moved. Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, if we could take up Senate File 564, it's the absentee voting modifications. And I'm happy to go through the bill section by section if members would want. But in the interest of time, I will try. Well, first, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A1 amendment, which makes really some technical changes and puts the bill in the shape I would like it.
Senator Sieben moved the A1 amendment. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? So moved. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this bill provides an opportunity for people to, citizens to vote through mail by choice. It takes away the statutory language that requires a reason for which you need to cast an absentee ballot. And then there are conforming changes in the rest of the bill. So again, if it's acceptable with the committee members, I will kind of skip over the more detailed explanation of the different sections of the bill. And some of my testifiers, I believe, too, will make reference to some of the other changes that occur. Ms. Frazier, if that's okay, could testify first on the bill.
Thank you, Senator Sieben. Ms. Frazier, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I actually have several handouts, if we could have somebody distribute these.
Share numbers.
Senator Sieben asked me to, I have got this for you, asked me to go over the current process for processing absentee ballots so that folks would be clear on what the steps are as we're looking at changing this. And so I have a few different handouts. One lays out the steps, and I've also included an absentee ballot application and an absentee ballot return envelope or signature envelope. And so just to quickly run through the steps when a person votes absentee, first, the voter, of course, fills out the application, and you have a copy of an application that I have filled out to vote by absentee ballot. And the election official will ensure that it is filled out completely and will check the statewide voter registration system to see if the voter is already registered at this address. And if the voter is already registered at this address, then they will send the person one set of materials for pre-registered voters. If the person is not registered at all or not registered at this address, they will send them a separate set of materials, which includes a voter registration application. So I've filled out my absentee ballot application, and the information there is complete, and so I would be sent an absentee ballot, a ballot envelope to put my ballot in, as well as this signature envelope, which you'll see has a form on it. When I return this, the ballot is provided to an absentee ballot board, which is made up of specially trained election judges of two different major political parties who work as a team. They then receive the ballot within 3 to 5 days and compare the information on the envelope to the information on the absentee ballot application. Or, because the information is input into the statewide voter registration, they can compare the information on the envelope directly to the information in the statewide voter registration system if they choose. So, in the course of accepting or rejecting the envelope, the two judges would look at this and see whether my name matched and whether my address matched, and then would see whether the ID number matched. On the application, we ask for all ID numbers so that regardless of which ID number the person provides in their envelope, it's more likely to match. Only if the ID number does not match do they actually compare the signatures and do a signature match. This was a change also in 2010 because we found that while election officials have lots of skills, they're not trained in handwriting analysis. So we added the ID numbers at that point so that they could be compared from the application to the return envelope. And that is the one purpose, is to ensure that the envelope was returned by the same person who applied for the ballot. The ID numbers are not otherwise verified against databases. We would see that my I did sign it. I still need to sign it, even if the signatures are not compared. The witness needs to have filled it out and provide a street address in Minnesota and sign it as well. And as long as those pieces are in place, the ballot must be accepted. If, for example, I had forgotten to sign it or forgotten to have my witness fill it out, the ballot would have to be rejected. The ballot board and the election official would either, depending upon the timing, if it's more than 5 days before the election, send me an entirely new absentee ballot along with an explanation of why it was rejected. Enclosed, please find a new ballot. You forgot to sign it. Please be sure to sign it this time. Or if it's within 5 days of the election, the law requires that the election official attempt to contact the voter either by email or phone. The thinking being at that point in the process, it may be too late to mail the voter the information and have it returned. And so you attempt to contact the voter so they can figure out how they want to proceed, if they're able to come into the office, if their situation has changed and they're now able to go to the polling place. Whether the ballot is accepted or rejected, again, has to be documented in the statewide voter registration system. And this allows voters to look online and check on the status of their ballot as well. And then ballot envelopes must be stored securely up until 5 p.m. on the Friday before the election. At that point, the absentee ballot boards, again, judges of two different major political parties, work in teams, and they have to mark the roster to ensure that the person cannot vote again in person. If the ballot was accepted before the roster was printed, it will automatically be printed on the roster after my name, AB, in big letters, so that the election judges will know that I cannot vote because my absentee ballot has already been accepted and counted. If the ballot was accepted after the roster was printed, then the ballot board members will have to go through the rosters manually and write AB next to my name. If the rosters have already been distributed to the municipal clerks and or the election judges, they need to generate a supplemental list, and that information has to get to the polling place so that the roster can be marked. They cannot process an absentee ballot further until that step is taken to ensure that a voter does not get more than one ballot cast. After the rosters are marked, they're allowed to open the signature envelopes and remove the ballot envelopes. They set up a pile of ballot envelopes, and then they open the ballot envelopes. The point of the ballot envelope is so that you can't take the ballot out and say, oh, Senator Siepen voted for X, Y, and Z. There's another envelope to protect her privacy. Then the ballots may be fed into the voting machines. The boards ensure that the number of signature envelopes is equal to the number of ballot envelopes, which is equal to the number of ballots for that precinct. And after they've been fed into the machines, the ballot boards remove the ballots and store them securely. And the ballots are not counted until the polls close at 8 p.m. So that's just kind of an overview of the steps that are taken in processing an absentee ballot under the current system, and it would be very similar if the reasons for voting by absentee ballot were eliminated. I'd be happy to answer any questions or if you want to move on to other testifiers.
Senator Siepen.
I'd just add that Ms. Magnum, again, referenced about how much it costs in Edina to process absentee ballots, and in Ramsey County, the cost of processing a no-excuse absentee balloting is roughly $7.28. I'll just bring that forward to reiterate the facts that implementing this with in-person early voting makes sense because you would be able to cut down on those administrative expenses. And again, to go back to why I think we should get rid of the excuse of this bill of why it is that, as you saw on the application form, Minnesotans are checking right now why they're going to need an absentee ballot, and it's either their absence from the precinct, their illness or disability, an eligible emergency declared by the governor, or a quarantine declared by the federal or state government, religious discipline or observance of a religious holiday, or service as an election judge. And again, there's really no way to verify that the person is indeed doing one of these or whichever thing they're checking. It also, I would note, doesn't say that they think they may be absent
from their precinct. It just says they will be absent from their precinct. So I think in a general vein of good government, this is a reasonable thing to implement in conjunction with early voting.
Thank you, Senator Sieben. If there's not any questions about the procedure and how it works, I think we should go to our testifiers and then open it up for discussion.
Chairman, I just did have one question on the procedure.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Fraser, you talked about doing this through the mail, but this process of voting absentee can also be done at the same counters at the county, at which the staff there would help the voter to conduct all this process, and then it would also have the savings of not going through the mail. Is that correct?
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, if a person votes absentee in person, it saves the postage cost. But there's still the application that needs to be filled out. The absentee ballot board still needs to accept or reject the ballot. And if the voter forgot to sign it, for example, they would still need to mail a new ballot to that absentee voter, or if it's just before the election, attempt to contact them.
Just follow up on that. And Ms. Fraser, in regards to that, it's been testified before that the process by which you go through this takes some time, as I understand, because you need to check some systems, especially if they're also registering to vote and doing some other things. I recall some previous testimony on other bills included an amount of time that you needed in order to, I don't know if there was 9 points or 9 systems that you needed to check or something.
Ms. Fraser.
You recall that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, people who do same-day registration with an absentee ballot are treated identically to people who do same-day registration at the polling place, in that their voter registration is not processed until after Election Day.
Interesting. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And one other question I have. You mentioned that that there are judges from two different political parties. Are there instances when these AB judges are not from two different political parties, or how does that work?
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, for domestic absentee ballots, the ballot board judges are always required to be paired, people from two different major political parties. For the military and overseas voters, there is not that requirement.
Just one quick follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have observed sometimes where county staff are doing the ballot board. And my question is, do we ask our county staff then to declare political party as they are being a ballot board?
Mr. Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, if the county staff are serving as an absentee ballot board for domestic absentee ballots, they must declare party affiliation because there has to be balance. There are, for some of the nonpartisan elections, like school district elections, I believe they are not required to, but for state elections, they are.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think we should go to our testifiers. First up, we have Laura Frederick Wang and Debbie Erickson. If you could both come up together, I think there's another chair. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify this afternoon. My name is Laura Frederick Wang, and I'm the Executive Director of the League of Women Voters Minnesota. For those of you who aren't familiar with our organization, LWV Minnesota is going to be marking our 94th anniversary this year of ensuring that every voter's right to vote is protected. Today, we have local leagues in 39 communities across Minnesota, where our members produce voter guides, host and moderate hundreds of forums and debates across the state, register voters, and answer questions from voters about elections. In the days leading up to the election, our office ran a hotline that took calls from voters who had a wide variety of situations and questions about voting on Election Day. Many of those calls were simple, but some of those questions were much more complicated and reflected the complexity and the uncertainty of many people's day-to-day lives. This included people who had unexpected work and family commitments, who learned in the days before the election that they might have a conflict on Election Day. It included people who were uncertain about their transportation on Election Day and weren't quite sure how they were going to get to the polls to vote.
Well, we were able to provide people with information for a phone number to help them get rides to the polls on election day. By midday on the day of the election, we found out that that number was full. They were no longer taking reservations, and we did not have a place that we could continue to refer people. Now, a lot of our reasons for supporting this bill are very similar to the reasons that you heard on the previous bill, so I will keep my comments brief. But I do want to say that our experience with helping voters vote in Minnesota has demonstrated two very important things to us. Minnesotans want to vote, and they take that responsibility very seriously. The people who called our office were not concerned necessarily about their convenience or how to fit voting into their schedule in a way to make it easy for them, but they were people who had some real logistical problems that they needed some help working through, who would have benefited greatly had we had a more open system, such as no-excuse absentee voting or the early voting bill that you heard before. I'd like to just give a few examples of some of the people that I talked to on the day of in the days leading up to the election. We talked to a woman who found out that she might be needing to go in for surgery. She had a doctor's appointment on Monday and was going to find out that day if they were going to be sending her for surgery. She did not know if whether or not under our current system she could get an absentee ballot. We did refer her to the county and said that it was most likely that she would be able to. But she did not feel comfortable because of the uncertainty of the situation. I talked to people who said that they were going to go into work on Monday and would find out then if they were going to be sent to travel that week and did not know whether or not that could get them an absentee ballot or not. These are all people who I think would have benefited greatly had we had a system such as no-excuse absentee balloting or early voting. Another caller that stands out in my mind was a woman who called me up, and she said, "I am 6 months pregnant. I have toddler twins. Can you tell me what time of day the line is going to be shortest at the polls?" We were able to help her. She wanted to go vote, but I can't imagine how much easier it would have been for her had she been able to order an absentee ballot in advance and fill it out rather than having to worry about how she was going to get her and her children to the polls that day so she could vote. Again, we strongly urge the committee to support these proposals. Like I said, the people who contact our office are people who take their right to vote and their responsibility to vote very seriously. I think that 21st century life in America has gotten to be much more complicated with more two-income families, an aging population with more health issues that create a lot of uncertainty. And I think that in order to ensure the strength of our democracy and our proud tradition of civic participation, I think we need an election system that keeps up with those challenges. So I appreciate your testimony, and I urge you to support these proposals.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Erickson, welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Debbie Erickson, and I'm the Elections Coordinator for Crow Wing County. I'm here speaking to you as the President of the Elections Committee for the Minnesota Association of County Officers today. Senate File 564 provides for no-excuse absentee voting, and MACO supports the concept of no-excuse absentee voting. Absentee voting continues to increase throughout the state and nation. In 2012, 267,464 Minnesotans, or 9% of those who totally voted in Minnesota, cast an absentee ballot. Across the country, nearly 30% of early and absentee voters were accounted for in all total votes cast. This is a trend that we expect to see continue to grow in future years. Absentee voting actually offers additional security in the voter integrity issue. All voters who apply for an absentee ballot are cross-checked in the statewide voter registration system at the time of application. This is not currently an option in the polling locations. This cross-check allows for voter status info to be noted and resolved prior to issuing of a ballot. MACO also supports the concept of automatically sending ballots by non-forwardable mail to all voters on the permanent absentee voter list each year. The current process requires two separate mailings, an application, and a ballot. All voters who are on the permanent absentee ballot mailing list have already completed an absentee ballot application. There are currently about 8,100 permanent absentee voters statewide. In subsequent years, by not having to duplicate the effort of sending ballots and applications, local governments would be able to see cost savings. The main concern that we have with this bill is the time frame for processing the ballots. Currently, statute authorizes processing of absentee ballots to begin with the close of business on the fourth day prior to the election. With the anticipated increase in absentee ballots, we would like to see a few more days to process the ballots effectively. We would recommend increasing the length of time to the beginning the processing with the close of business the seventh day prior to the election. This would allow for an appropriate length of time to process the absentee ballots. Thank you for your time, and we urge you to support Senate File 564.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for coming to the cities. Mr. McGrath, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Once again, I'm Dan McGrath, President of the Minnesota Majority. I'll be brief on this, and I'm going to sound kind of hard on this bill, but let me preface this by saying that between the two proposals, for either early voting or for no excuse absentee voting, the second is preferable for some of the reasons that were just stated by the previous testifiers. I do believe there's somewhat more potential for integrity with the ballot boards with no excuse absentee voting than with early voting. But the ballot boards themselves have some problems that hopefully this legislature can address and tighten up with future legislation. So, following the contentious 2000 election, presidential election, former Democrat President Jimmy Carter and former Republican Secretary of State James Baker formed a commission to figure out what we can do to improve our federal electoral process, and their findings were issued in an extensive report in 2005. Besides recommending one of my favorite subjects, requiring photo ID to vote, the bipartisan report concluded that absentee ballots remain the largest source of potential voter fraud. Given that, I think we should be cautious about expanding the use of absentee balloting. With Minnesota already leading the nation in voter participation, access to ballots doesn't really seem to be a problem. We've also had the highest number of convictions for voter fraud of any state in recent history, and thousands of voters have been flagged for challenge after having voted in the last three election cycles when the information they provided on their voter registration form didn't check out. Fraud is a problem. What, then, is the value of expanding absentee voting without any additional safeguards against fraud? It seems to me this bill will increase the potential for fraud with no obvious benefit, and I would urge members to shelf this bill, table it, until some safeguards can be added to it to protect against expanding voter fraud in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. McGrath. Members, there questions, comments? Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, I'd move that we lay over Senate File 564 as amended.
Senator Sieben renews her motion that we move Senate File 564 as amended to be laid over. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
It passes. Looks like we have no more business. The committee is adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.